So welcome to Podcast Pildroid. My name is Russell, you know the drill. Messrs. Barton and Taylor. And how are you both?
Good, Russ. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Schools have started, so I'm quite happy about that. I'm not sure you will be to the same extent. I don't know, but
it beats the homeworking. I wasn't made to work at home. Oh. It's fine. School's fine.
And it beats homeschooling as well. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, not too bad. Creche has started here, so our youngest is back, but we have 2 weeks until school starts. Wait a minute, you can probably hear him. He's supposed to... Right, Dylan! I'm doing a podcast.
Was that Dylan? I thought that was... I don't know if that was like a guitar here. I thought it was Slash or something.
I don't know what he's doing. He's just come over to say something to me. Wait a sec.
Sorry.
Okay. All right.
So what does he need to do?
Be quiet. In bed.
Unless you've got any thoughts on the inexperience in the Bulgaria squad.
Sorry about that. All right.
It's the podcast equivalent of bringing your kids on to the pitch. You've won a tournament and a cup final, isn't it? And parading them on the pitch. But to be fair to him, it's Nations League Eve, and
the excitement.
It's still an exciting time. Is it still as exciting as it was when you were a child?
Good. It's Christmas, Easter, Nations League Eve in that order, wasn't it?
It was quite a nice insight into the sort of positive parenting in Leon's household as well. More like a sort of Ryan Giggs arm around the shoulder. Do you understand what you need to do to improve rather than chucking teacups or, you know, shouting or whatever, which is, after all this time locked down, I think it's quite impressive.
Thanks, yeah.
None of the parental hairdryer treatment.
Yeah, there's been a bit of that, but I'm sort of trying to calm things down as things sort of return to normal. Yeah.
So, obviously, we're playing Finland and Bulgaria now this next couple of days, and it's the night before the Finland game. We'll get this out early tomorrow morning by hook or by crook. And the first game in, I don't know, how many months is it? I can't do the maths.
It's November, wasn't it?
It's been a while. And I think what's odd is that usually fixtures at this sort of first weekend or so of September come, what, 2 to 3 weeks into the season. And probably some clubs are reluctant to let players that they've just got match fit. They just get into the groove of playing. Whereas now, they're probably going to be grateful that they're going to get some game time in what are, you know, at the end of the day, competitive games, maybe not properly competitive games, but there's something riding on them.
There's going to be more pressure than ever, isn't there, for players to come along if they're not 100%. I mean, we've got seven international games in the next 3 months. The season's just gone by, so clubs won't be desperate for players with even a slight knock to come along and play. I wonder what it means for the sort of how seriously we take the Nations League as well. If we get to a point where the doubleheaders in October or November are sort of littered with pullouts, not just from us, for other countries as well, it may bring about a pressure to start seeing the Nations League much more as a sort of, you know, glory friendlies, as opposed to the slightly more kind of competitive thing I think we enjoyed with it the first time round. Could potentially be a sort of victim of the way football has been restricted over the last few months and the need to cram pretty much a full club season into, what, 5 weeks shorter than they'd normally have. So I wouldn't be surprised if by October, November, we start to see even more pressure for players to pull out and more and more experimental lineups have to be tried.
Yeah, which might lead to some mismatches as well, I suppose. Yeah. I wondered whether, in a parallel universe, the Euro 2020 happened, and this is almost the start of a new inter-tournament cycle. But it feels to me, possibly, that these Nations League games are almost a bit of a sort of get-out-of-jail-free card for Giggs. He's got extra games with something riding on them to hone his squad. I think there's a lot to be learned from these Nations League games for us.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, like, when he took over, we had the Nations League games before we had any qualifiers when Giggs first took over. So he had a pretty long run at it, in a way. Used those games to cap players and give them experience in competitive games. If it feels to me like Nations League is sort of halfway between a friendly and a qualifier, that's how I kind of look at it. It's better than having meaningless friendlies for sure. And it caps players if you're kind of one of those people who gets a little paranoid about that. Nico Williams is likely to play in the next two games, which means that he won't jump ship to England. Not that I was ever, that was ever something that I paid any attention to whatsoever, but some people do. So, yeah, again, he's got a bit of a run at the tournament, in a way, in like he had a run at the qualifiers.
It's unusual from a player's point of view in that it creates opportunities that wouldn't normally be there in a run-up to the tournament. So, for example, we've now got seven games, and yes, the Nations League is more competitive than friendly, but it's not the sort of game you're made of trying players out. So if you're a player aspiring to be in the squad or the team, it's much more possible for you to break your way into that team by getting a couple of Nations League games than it is to try and force your way into a qualification campaign. I mean, look at our centre-half situations. No Mepham, no Roden, no Ashley Williams. If Cabango and or Locker, even Lawrence, say, go in and have a couple of good games, their profile and their standing in the squad, their likelihood of being on a plane in a year's time is massively increased. We've seen, I think, just today or yesterday, whenever those pull-outs came, Brennan Johnson and Woodburn. So those players can start to realise, well, we're on the fringes now as well. So it maybe opens up more possibility for the squad to, well, for competition, I guess, for places in that squad and that, and particularly that squad for next summer.
And we recorded something a couple of weeks ago, which is sort of on ice, I suppose, where we're looking at more longer term sort of squad squad permutations. And we've actually spent quite a bit of time talking about Tom Lockyer. I think he comes out of this weekend potentially in a really, really strong position, because we talked a lot about Roden and Mepham struggling with fitness and still not back. With Ashley dropping out, he's now our most experienced first-choice centre-back.
He's just got a move to Luton, so he'll be championship level for the next season. It's good for him. I'm sort of surprised James Chester hasn't got a call-up, with Mepham, Roden being injured and Ashley Williams pulling out. I don't know if there's some sort of issue there. I kind of went and had a little bit of a Google before to see if he'd, you know, announced that he doesn't want to play for Wales again. I couldn't find anything like that. He's only 31 years old, been a brilliant player for us, and he ended the season really well with Stoke, and he earned himself a contract for another year. So I don't know. I'm not quite sure what the issue is there.
Well, I've seen nothing to suggest that he's retired or made himself unavailable. The only thing I could suggest on that is, given how late that season ended up finishing, a player in his position who's had fairly long-term issues with injuries and has managed to get themselves fit for the end of that season. With season starting so quickly, I wouldn't be surprised if they're managing injuries and managing their fitness, and maybe this particular international break is an opportunity for players like that maybe to rest. I know we don't ideally want that from a Wales point of view, but James Chester has been quite open, I think, in the past about knowing that he's going to have to be quite careful in managing his fitness to see out a few more years of his career. So it doesn't surprise me that much that he wasn't originally in the squad.
So he wasn't originally in the squad, but then when Ashley Williams pulled out, maybe he might get a call up, but he didn't call up any more defenders.
Which probably goes to show that even what little he's seen of Ben Cabango in camp, he's probably happy with, and him and Lockyer are presumably going to be starting. So they'll probably get a full 90 or near as damn it under their belts. Let's just let him just get back into football a little. If this was October or November doubleheader, I would imagine that Chester, if he wasn't already in the squad, would be getting a call up. You mentioned Nico Williams. I don't think any sentient being on the planet was ever worried about to play for England via, I think, a pair of grandparents. Got, for me, probably, you know, one of the best right-backs ahead of him in the world, in Alexander-Arnold. So I would imagine this is probably the first time that Wales fans have ever seen him play in the flesh, other than under-19s games or, you know, our Liverpool fans.
And it's a double-header. I wonder if the Finland game potentially is the tougher of the two. And maybe we stick with as close to our kind of established or close to established 11 as we can, given the pullout. So I wouldn't be surprised to see maybe Conor Roberts start the first game and then maybe Nico Williams play against Bulgaria. I think, you know, the club like Liverpool and with the faith they seem to be putting in him in terms of first team experience, a few games at the end of the season in the Charity Shield, this is good. You can see he's going to be a footballer, but I don't think there's any desperate need to parachute him straight into the into the team urgently.
Yeah, I agree with Gaz there. With Connor Roberts finished the season strongly with Swansea, and I would look to sort of ease Nico Williams in maybe as substitute in the first game or starting the second game as well. There's less pullouts at fullback, so there's less pressure to play him. But it's Ben Cabango who's going to be the debutant who's got a bit more pressure on him, I guess, in terms of the centre-backs who are missing. And it's going to be a real chance to see what he can do. And it's quite exciting. He's had a good club career with Swansea, and he seems really buzzing about being in the squad. And it's going to be interesting to have a look and see how he goes.
And he's an alumnus of my and Rich's kids' school in Llandaff. That's called Penkai, so shout out to them. So they were quite proud when he got the call up.
Do we read anything into, I don't know how it was presented in the official announcement, but the BBC website had Ethan Ampadu named among the defenders. Mm. So whether we read anything into that, like he could potentially play at centre-half. I don't know. I mean, it would be a shame given the loss of Allen and Ramsey in midfield. It would feel like even more of a scratch midfield three if Ampadu's moved backwards.
Yeah, that's the way I read it as well. Ampadu, with Allen and Ramsey being out, has got to play further forward.
Matt Smith and Joe Morel were both picked, and they've more often than not, I think I'm right in saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's been sort of one or other, certainly, and obviously, certainly in the starting 11. And with Matt Smith coming back, I thought that was, I did wonder, like yourself, Kaz, whether that meant that, are we going to have a go at Ampadu at centre back, or maybe in that sort of sweeping role with maybe three, you know, in a back three maybe. But I'd be surprised if we didn't see Ampadu in midfield, particularly given the, as you said, given the Ramsey dropout as well. Am I right in thinking as well that there's five substitutions as well in these games? Does the Nations League come under that increased number of subs?
Oh, quite possibly. I wouldn't be surprised at the moment. It seems like the sort of thing, even if it's not already, that they do under the circumstances at the moment. Yes, it does give opportunities to play around a little bit. I never liked those days, mind, when friendlies, you could have ridiculous numbers of substitutions. It's still quite high. It's a limit of about six now. Mm-hmm. But there was a period of time in international football where it felt like almost between half time and 60 minutes, the entire team was changing. Particularly some of the big nations tended to play their friendlies like that. And it'd be nice not to have the games collapse too much into chucking on the substitutes in the last hour, so that it doesn't really tell us anything about a full 90 for some of these players.
But I guess it's also from a sort of player welfare perspective as well, isn't it? I guess it's understandable given that they played, then they have this long break, then there's a real congestion of games then at the end of the season. And, you know, as you said, for some cases, the last season hasn't long ended. I think maybe we can cut them some slack on this occasion. But yeah, those games, you're right, have tended to just descend into a real pedestrian pace, which is then hard for players who are looking to try to make an impression to stamp their authority on it when the game's being played at 40, 50, 60 mile an hour, you know. So yeah, I can see where you're coming from. Again, I think it comes back to this point, assuming that there is five substitutions allowed, then it does strengthen Giggs's hand in using that squad across the two games. It keeps club managers on side as well, I guess. But he gets to look at not just individuals, but then looks at combinations. If Cabango is going to start, I can probably see why that wouldn't be Nico Williams starting as well, because suddenly that's new players, it's new caps, it's new combinations. Ben Davies, I'm assuming, starts on the left, of course, which adds a bit of experience to it. But that's all, I think, you know, really exciting a year out from a tournament appearance. It just reinforces my thinking, just talking to you, that, you know, I think Giggs must be quietly really reveling in the fact that he's got this extra year to develop the squad. And of course, not just with youngsters, there's 31-year-old, been around the block a few times, strikers, Cruyff Turners in the form of Robson Kanu returning as well.
Yeah, I'd like to see how Robson Kanu maybe start one of these games. I know a little bit like with what Leon was saying about Roberts being in possession of the shirt at right back, you know, we can't really look past Kiefer Moore when we're writing down the actual team. But Moore has done such a good job to make himself the sort of indisputable forward line that now that Hal's back, to have a sort of another option to try out and see where he goes now, but should be. You know, all of club form indicates he should still be a really good option for us. You know, 10 goals last season. I think that's the only time he's got into double figures in club football. So given that he signed for West Brom, what, after 2016, and there was a sense that, I think it was it Pulis in charge then, didn't particularly want him, and he maybe was never really first choice for a while. And they are quite a turnover of players at West Brom, strikers in particular, got himself in the team, helped them to promotion, scoring a few goals. I think it's a really encouraging time for him to come back. Whatever you think about maybe him retiring early, it seems for the sake of his career and his mental approach to the game and his happiness in his career, it seems to have been good for him. And if we benefit from that now by him being available again, then excellent.
We talked a lot about retirements and the manner in which they were done in the Toshack years trilogy. To be fair to Hal, it seems to have been the way to do it and undo it on his part. I mean, I suppose there was I think what was interesting, even this week, by all accounts, let Giggs know that he was interested in returning. He's not going to great efforts or pains to say that he wasn't returning because we'd qualified. But the fact that he was sort of alluding to that suggests that he was aware of that little criticism that was knocking around sort of this time last year when it was being mooted. But he makes himself available. Giggs doesn't have to pick him if for any reason he didn't want to or was unhappy with the manner in which it was done, I guess.
And he must know he's not coming back into a squad where he's some sort of instant choice. He feels that that's something he wants, and he's got the track record in that period up to before he retired to show that he is committed Welsh international football. It's not like those days when we found out like Ben Thatcher or whoever was eligible and maybe they saw an easy route into international football but weren't really bothered. This is a guy with a great track record in a Welsh shirt. So, come back.
44 caps in, 10 years basically suggests that he's probably never been a first choice. That's an average of, 4.5 games a season, which is, not too bad. But he's, lots of sub-appearances, subbed off.
And you're right to point out, he never really was up until that sort of campaign leading up to the Euro. And even then, there were occasions when Sam Vokes seemed to be the better option.
44 caps. He has completed 90 minutes. Do anybody fancy taking a guess?
20 times.
Less.
Yes.
I got 15.
You are both way off. It is only, according to this, 4 times.
What?
That's mad.
Whoa.
Even at his peak for us, he had quite a lot of get. He was coming back from injury. He wasn't fully fit. He played for us when he was unattached after the Euros. I can remember being on the touchline in those games where we were hanging on for a win or hanging on for a point, and he'd wander over to the touchline knowing it was time for him to come off just to sort of slow the game down and make that substitution take a little bit longer. So that was always part of the routine in close games for us. Robson Kanu comes off and takes as long over it as he possibly can.
The Belgium game, I'm just remembering now, the 1-0 in Cardiff. Because, he'd run himself into the ground and then...
I was going to say, playing a lone striker role is pretty unforgiving as well, to be fair to him. But yeah, I dig this stat out. There's no ulterior motive, just being a bit of a nerd about these things. I feel obliged to have to tell you which 4 games. It's the Costa Rica friendly game. That was his first up at Hampden when he scored. That was a full 90. Macedonia at home in the win, 2013. The 0-0 in Brussels in the Euro 2016 qualifiers. That was the last time. That was his 24th cap.
Wow.
The 20 caps after, he usually started and then came off rather than came on.
Are you thinking that it's like Mauro Giggs is going to go with, obviously Kiefer Moore and Bale and the winger, so Dan James or Harry Wilson? Do you think that's the likely starting forward line?
I would think so. I wonder if Wilson plays the Ramsey role. He played that sort of role in a couple of while Ramsey was out, and he's sort of trying to occupy that space in the centre. I don't think we haven't got a huge number of obvious options in the centre midfield. I would think Dan James will definitely. He's been sort of talked an interview with Giggs this week and talking about it being a platform for him. To, obviously with Greenwood coming through, and there's a lot of talk about Jadon Sancho there, at least playing a huge amount of football to start with. So it's a great chance for him to remind us a little bit about, why he's so dangerous and talented. So he's probably going to start, almost certainly.
Well, Giggs has talked about him this week already in press conferences. And I think he'll go with Dan James, because I think it's as much about managing the players as well as managing the, you know, the team and anything else that he wants to get out of these fixtures. I think it's about showing he still has belief in him, because he ended the season on a bit of a low, I suppose, certainly in comparison to how he started it with United. So I think there's a little bit about there around, you know, showing he still believes in Dan James, and he's got an important role to play, you know, not least because he's got the ability to get to the byline and put the crosses in. And he's become, with only 5 caps, this almost this talismanic figure, Kiefer Moore. And he's, whatever he is, he's about 9 foot tall. But, you know, arguably the better header of the ball is Bale. So, I mean, you know, getting him coming in on some crosses, whether it's from James or whoever else, does seem to be a particularly good tactic for us.
Yeah.
I think he'll go with that. And I think as well, Wilson going a little bit more centrally and through the middle, I think, not just because of Ramsey not there, because of Brooks not being there either, beginning to get a little bit thin in terms of what options that we've got in that sort of role.
It's Johnny Williams, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, there is. And Tom Lawrence has played a little bit sort of in the hole, or as a, you know, as a striker just off the nine in the past. But it strikes me it'll probably be Wilson through. I'd be perfectly happy to see Johnny Williams, but I guess it's probably going to be Harry.
Yeah,
possibly Johnny Williams could. I mean, our midfield three could be adaptable across the two games. I mean, Harry are a much weaker team, and it might be to have Morella and Ampadu in the second game. Maybe Johnny Williams comes in for one of them potentially if we want to start Harry Wilson in that role. There is some flexibility around that midfield three.
Yeah, just thinking about go back to Russ's point about Kiefer Moore. I was just thinking about this earlier, actually, and I think we've got a lot of nippy young wingers as well who can beat a man and put a cross in. I'd love to see a sort of scoring headers on a regular basis. It'd be sort of quite unusual in a way, because it's not how that many international teams really play at the moment. It's something that could really work for us, looking at the players we have. And Kiefer Moore's emergence is exciting, and his move to Cardiff's quite exciting as well. I think he could become a cult hero there, in the way that he's become a cult hero for Wales already, and that will sort of just add even more to the sort of celebration of him when we play home games at the CCS, I guess, if he does well at Cardiff. And looks on paper a good move anyway. We'll see how it goes, but I'm quite excited to see how he goes this season.
I mean, in my opinion, he's significantly better than the other options. He's likely to do well if Cardiff do well next year. You know, if Cardiff have a season, as it looks like they may well do, given the way the last season, then I think that could be a really, really good move for him. You know, it suits the way he plays and Cardiff plays. And if he has a great championship season, it's only going to make him better and better for the Wales team, I would have thought.
I'll confess I'm not an authority on Finnish football. It's a hard one to read. There's not a huge number of gaps in their defenders outside of Jiri Jurinen, which is one of the only ones I've heard of. And then you go, okay, so they're obviously quite young, quite raw. Maybe they're trying to blood a few, you know, new players as well, not too dissimilar to us. And then you look at some of these players who've got maybe, you know, 18, 22, 26 caps. They're all in their late 20s or early 30s. So that sort of fills me with a little bit of optimism. And so then you've got a few sort of 1, 2, 3 cap defenders as well. So yeah, and then you look at who's pulled out, it's all their experience actually. It's those players who are in their early 30s, all with 50 plus caps, give or take. So, you know, they could be there for the taking without any home fans as well, of course. But of the way the you know, the games are all closed off to us all, then that was a great time to be going to start a campaign, but you know, to start this tournament with an away game.
I mean, they've qualified for the Euros. It's the first time they've ever qualified. So obviously to qualify, you've got to be a decent team and in a good place. Yeah. You know, they'll be confident. But as you know, certainly you look at their squad and there's nothing scary there. As goes Pukki at Norwich, maybe his standout, 25 international goals. It's a good record.
Yeah,
he's about the only household name, isn't he? I mean, I look at their qualifying campaign, and it looks like they're decent at home. You know, they qualified second with a record 1-4. So basically, they beat Liechtenstein and Armenia twice. They won their home games against Bosnia and against Greece. And although they lost to those teams away, the fact Bosnia and Greece, who were effectively their rivals for second place, chucked away stupid points elsewhere, meant that they went through, and they went through pretty comfortably in the end. And they, you know, pretty much won games at home other than against Italy. They didn't concede a lot of goals at home. So I wonder if they're a team now that, you know, hasn't got standout players like the days when they had Lippmann. And so, you know, maybe it's more about the team and the team ethic. One thing that jumps out at you on stats is there's only three outfield players who are over 30. I think about 15 of the squad are between 22 and 26. So it's a young squad. They're not players we've heard of, but they could well be up-and-coming, decent young players in perhaps some of the smaller leagues in Europe. So when you get those kind of squads, and it can be the case that a group of players like that come together and 2-3 years later, they've moved on to bigger things, particularly on the back of appearing in a major tournament as Finland will do next year. It's, no, I don't think they're going to be a pushover.
And there's probably a Finnish football podcast at this exact moment looking at the Wales wiki page going, there's a 31-year-old in Italia in the squad. So it cuts both ways, obviously.
No, tell you what, Russ, if I was a Finnish and a Finland football fan looking at this, I'd be looking at our squad and saying, well, the spine of our defence and midfield is completely ripped out and this Wales team's there for the taking because they have to play some inexperienced players in the centre of midfield and centre of defence. That could be a problem if I was looking at it from the other perspective.
And these figures, in some respects, I mean, they're instructive, they're useful. So you look at ours, I'm on the wiki page now, Joe Roden is under the recent call-up section, four caps, no goals. Roden's been brilliant in all those four games and arguably is probably first-choice centre-back. You can extrapolate almost too much from what are very raw figures, I suppose. It'd be nice if Gunter got a game, put him in the shop window for a move, would edge on to 97 caps. Been in the nervous 90s for, it feels like, a couple of years now. In fact, it probably is a couple of years.
Yeah.
Bulgaria, on the other hand, they're a little bit more straightforward, hopefully. So they're a really inexperienced team. They seem to have got battered throughout their campaign. England especially hammered them, didn't they, a couple of times. I remember those games. Oh, they seem to be just one of those sort of really limited, you know, slightly above the really weak, so, you know, Georgia, Belarus kind of level European sides now, which is sad to see for those of us who remember Kostadinov and Leshkov.
And I'm not sure quite how much we should draw from the FIFA rankings ordinarily, but certainly this year. And of these four teams, I think I should be calling it a pot as opposed to a group. We're ranked 20 in the world and we're the highest. Ireland are 24th and Finland and Bulgaria are nestled up against one another in 58th and 59th, which, to be honest, was a bit higher than I was expecting Bulgaria to be, given, as you say, you know, England made mincemeat of them. They had a poor campaign. And if you look at the squad they've selected for these games this weekend, there's nobody with more than 3 goals to their name and only a total of 12 goals in the whole squad.
They were such a strong side in the 90s. I remember just we had them in the Euro 96 qualifiers, didn't they?
Yeah.
They were full of quality players. He'd been to a World Cup semi-final, deservedly as well, yeah. And they're just nowhere near that level. Just got any of those sort of qualities at the moment.
I've just dug out the lineup that beat us 3-0 in Cardiff. Mikhailov in goal, Kremenlyev, Trifon Ivanov, of course. Yordanov, Kostadinov, Kiryakov, Stoichkov, Penev, all ended in Vs, obviously. Balakov, Lechkov. I mean, those are names. I mean, and not only that, there's a lot of caps in that lineup as well. I mean, there's barely anybody with under 30 caps. Stoichkov toyed with us that day, I seem to remember. Anything else to say about these games?
Just wondering whether we should do an obligatory bit of Bale chat. Are the days of Real Madrid being an iteration in how much game time Gareth Bale gets sort of done? If he turns up saying he's fit enough, is he playing both games? The tone's changed a bit today. In I think he's given an interview to Sky Sports today. There was a good line somewhere in here.
There's been that trope again, I suppose, that he's having difficulty in Madrid and he's coming to Wales where there's less pressure. It's a much, I don't know, maybe more welcoming, relaxed atmosphere, etc., etc. But what we've covered previously, certainly in the Toshak years, was how even when he was at Tottenham and struggling, there's been this, actually, let's see how much more relaxed he is when he joins up with Wales. That's been escape. When Harry Redknapp said he wanted him to take a break and go on holiday, he went back to Wales. And there was that sort of joke. So it's always been that refuge for him. So I don't read sort of overly too much into it, but it does make you wonder whether on home turf he's put that out or that's been allowed to be put out. Definitely a change of tone. That seems to be more than just some slip of the tongue or any sort of coincidence or anything.
Yeah, I mean, here we go. Look at the words. I tried to leave last year, but they blocked everything at the last second. It was a project I was excited for last year, but it didn't materialise. And there have been other instances, but the club won't allow it or something. Sorry, in terms of the club. So it's the tone seems very dismissive, putting it all on Real Madrid and them just being kind of difficult. And, you know, it looks like maybe sitting out a contract to the end of 2022 isn't looking quite so appealing, given, you know, that's effectively 2 years out of the game if he doesn't get picked at all.
Only possibly his last chance at a tournament at the end of this season to play only whatever it is, 14, 15, 16 games all season would be, or to start, sorry, isn't the best preparation for that. So, yeah, very interesting. I think as well, I don't know whether there's much to read into this. Again, it might be because it is on, you know, it's on home turf. It's in a fairly sort of safe, controlled environment, managed environment. I don't know with the Wales setup, but he usually doesn't say anything at all. It's all Jonathan Barnett that says everything, his agent. So the fact that he's come out and said that, interesting. Maybe reading more into that than it deserves, but that's definitely an interesting dynamic to me.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens. It's in the club's hands, and they make things very difficult, to be honest. I mean, that's a, you know, if we didn't know it already, that's a club where the relationship is definitely broken down, and he wants out. I would say, you know, that's going a little bit even beyond the sort of, you know, rolled up paper goggles and falling asleep in the stands at the end of the season. And it's maybe trying to force things along a little bit now.
That's sort of the way you would talk about it with his mates if he was catching up over a couple of shandies in Royal Oak in Whitchurch, or going for a carvery at the Hungry Horse in Whitchurch. But that's how he is, isn't he? When he comes back to Wales, it's all kind of laughs and giggles and mucking about.
Yeah, it's just great to see him smiling and like enjoying being on the training field, as he always is with Wales, and he's larking about and laughing. It's good to see. It's going to be interesting to see how he plays tomorrow, just having not played very much football at all. I'm sure he's going to be up for it, but is the body going to allow him to do what he wants to do to be at his peak? I don't know. We'll see tomorrow.
Ideally, he starts against Finland. We get a couple up. And he's brought off early, kept fresh, maybe plays at a half then against Bulgaria and gets some minutes under his belt, doesn't pick up any injuries, doesn't have to run himself into the ground. I cannot for 1 second see him playing 290s. But then from the point of view of that squad development sense, then I don't necessarily want him to either. I would prefer to see, you know, the players get a bit more time. I mean, I don't know if... Let's have a look on Woodburn, get a decent run out. Maybe, you know, is it an opportunity for caps for Brendan Johnson and so on and so forth. So, you know, it's a nice headache to have. And a great mane as well. Did you see those pictures on Twitter today? I think it was Phil Blanch. Apologies if it was somebody else. As if he was doing like some sort of Timotei advert, just kind of throwing his handsome, manly mane back. But shaved at the side. So he looked a little bit like he was in some sort of post-goth band in about 1985. Yeah, like the bass player of The Mission or something. I was very impressed. Got a lot of time for that look. I got a lot of time for any look that can do anything with hair, frankly, these days. But anyway, much better than the man bun, I thought.
Is his hair going to be open to play, though?
Depends on the weather. You wouldn't want it to be raining. You wouldn't want it. You wouldn't want it to be kind of, you know, all matted and lanky down his head if it was wet.
Yeah. Do you remember Ian Bishop, the West Ham?
Do I remember Ian Bishop?
He was like the one footballer I remember with long hair who always sort of wore it down. He didn't tie it up or anything. He just sort of ran around with this beautiful hair, yeah.
Beautiful hair for a beautiful man who was also a beautiful player. No, generally one of my all-time favourite players.
West Ham fan as a kid, yeah.
Lots of reasons I haven't quite put my finger on. But one of them was the fact I had a poster of West Ham on my wall as a kid and he had the same boots as I had. And they were Gola boots. And I can remember getting a couple of people kind of ripping a piss at me because I had these Gola boots, but I had quite big feet as a kid. And they kind of felt comfortable and I was happy with that. And then I felt vindicated for life that Ian Bishop was wearing them. I'm revealing quite a lot about myself here.
I'm just looking now on his Wikipedia now. He's...
He had a couple of games at Barry Town at the end of his career.
Oh, he's from Liverpool. I didn't know he was a Scouser.
He played in the Main Road Massacre. Massive amount of time for Ian Bishop.
Currently serves as a technical director for Evergreen FC in Leesburg, Virginia, USA. There you go.
Wow.
That's what Ian Bishop's doing.
I don't know about anyone else, but I feel like we've reached a natural stopping point.
I could go on, but
I bet you could.
Should we do some predictions, Bloy?
Yeah, I'm going to recklessly go for 2 wins.
Maybe I'll do something I've never done before and predict we'll actually lose to Finland, because I don't think perhaps the spine is a bit weak. So I'll say we'll lose to Finland, but beat Bulgaria because they don't look particularly good. So maybe a couple of 2-1s, 2-1 loss followed by a 2-1 win.
I don't know, I'll be optimistic. It's been so long since I've had any international football to enjoy. I'm going to be positive about it. So yeah, let's go a couple of wins as well. I think Finland have qualified for the Euros. They don't seem to be that great a side. And I think, you know, they're decent at home. If our whatever centre-back pairing we go with has a good game and copes well with Pukki and doesn't seem so out of their depth given inexperience, I think we'll be fine. So I reckon we'll nick that one. And I reckon we'll beat Bulgaria comfortably then, depending on whether there are any massive changes to personnel in the team. If it becomes a little bit like a second string, as could potentially happen, maybe be a bit more difficult, but I still think we'd probably win.
It's so warming to the heart to hear you be optimistic like that, Gaz. It really is.
Yeah, it's new me.
Well, it's Nations League Eve, of course, and I guess it's quite a heady time. Don't forget to put your stockings up and put some mince pies out for the Nations League reindeer.
Are you getting this podcast out in the next hour then?
I probably could have done if you hadn't gone about Ian Bishop. I'm just going to go and like search out what he's up to and kind of catch up with where he is. Before I do, the new away kit, hit or miss?
Oh, the yellow and green, it looks good. Yeah. It looks really good, yeah. Hit.
Gaz?
I mean, I was just thinking we nearly went a whole podcast without talking about kits at all. But yeah, just to indulge your rest, it's fine. I like it. It's nice.
There's been kits, there's been Ian Bishop.
What else could you want?
What else could you want? You're going to be playing on catch-up, so you're going to be trying to avoid all the spoilers on the way home from Five-a-Side tomorrow, Gaz, yeah?
I think so, yeah. I should be back within the first half hour or so of the game, so I won't be too far behind.
Yeah, okay. Well, I won't send any spoilers on the WhatsApp, skipping Five-a-Side as I am. Irish pubs for you, Leon, or...?
Probably, yeah, I think so. Or maybe go down to my friend Dave if he's up for watching it, because he's got Dazn. It's on Dazn.
Dazn. Is that Dave with the gloves, the skiing gloves?
No, okay. That's Andy.
That's Andy.
Dave's English, but we've sort of adopted him. He came to Bordeaux with us because we had a spare ticket. He's a bit of an honorary Wales fan as well.
But he won't be in a couple of games' time.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, of course. I've almost forgotten about that.
As Gus said earlier, is it 7 games, I think? They come thick and fast, don't they?
Yeah, 3 doubleheaders in the Nations League plus the England friendly. Yeah. And there's talk about rearranging the America game as well. So potentially 8 games. Well, there we are. That's if Bale plays 8 games between now and Christmas, that's all right, isn't it?
So keep him ticking over.
A few more in the new year. That's just the job.
And if Gunter doesn't play in any or many of them, then he's going to get some serious pressure on that 100 mark from the likes of Hennessy as well. So, yeah, fascinating. Well, it's been a long time, so I suppose we sort of deserve so many games in such a short period of time. So enjoy, stay safe, stay devilishly handsome, the two of you, and we'll maybe convene next week and have a look back at them. La, 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 la.